This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Indonesia's ambassador to Malaysia, Hermono, recently questioned the higher number of cases of mistreatment and abuse of domestic workers from Indonesia in the country, and he compared it to lower numbers of such cases in neighboring countries like Singapore. Then he also added that some of these cases in Malaysia pretty much amount to modern-day slavery, to forced labor. And that begs the question, what aren't we doing to address these cases that have been happening for a number of years? Because we know that these cases are not new. In fact, we know there are news reports of similar cases happening every now and again over the past years, over the past decades. So here, joining me today to discuss what steps we need to take, what legal reforms we need to tackle this issue, is Irene Xavier, Executive Director of Selangor Friends of Women Association. Thank you so much for joining me today, Irene.
Thank you, Sue Ann.
So I'll start with that statement, right, that the Indonesian ambassador made, you know, that Malaysia tends to see more cases of poor treatment of domestic workers compared to neighbors like Singapore, Hong Kong and Taiwan. And he said that, you know, they also employ a number of Indonesian domestic workers, but they don't see as many cases of abuse. And he said that in an interview with the news portal Free Malaysia Today. And what do you make of a statement and a comparison like that? You know, is what value does it bring to the conversation on the rights of domestic workers to compare how we're doing with other countries?
Yeah. Firstly, of course, there's abuse of domestic workers in all these other countries as well. Mm-hmm. But I think what we need to recognize is, like, for example, in Singapore, there is a clearer policy on domestic workers. Their policy is quite transparent, and workers can get access to complaints if they just contact the Human Resource Ministry of Manpower, as it's called in Singapore. So those things are available. The important point is that their system of recruitment and management of domestic workers is a known process. It is transparent. And also the enforcement is much stronger in Singapore than it is here in Malaysia. In Malaysia, to start with, we do not have a clear, transparent policy on recruitment of domestic workers. A good case in point now is the MOU between Indonesia and Malaysia. The whole MOU discussion process is done in secrecy. We really do not know what they are talking about and what agreements they are signing. So the need for transparency doesn't seem to be taken seriously in Malaysia for whatever reason. But for a national policy like this, there's no reason at all to be clouded in secrecy. It is not a national secret or national security affair. So this is the stance that Malaysia is taking regarding policies affecting migrant workers.
And could you elaborate more on why that transparency is important when, if we want to show that we are taking the welfare and the rights of migrant workers and of domestic workers seriously?
Yeah, it is important because we are saying that this is our national policy. It's just like the Employment Act. Whatever is in the Employment Act is open. Anyone who wants to know what their rights are, they can just look at the Employment Act. Now, in the case of this MOUs, there's no document that we can refer to, that we as activists can refer to, that domestic workers can refer to. So why? Why the secrecy? So that transparency, I think, is very important because law should be made and should be seen as working for people.
Is transparency a long-standing issue when it comes to, you know, these MOUs regarding the employment and recruitment of domestic workers?
Yes, this is standard Malaysian policy. MOUs are usually confidential.
All right. So as from the public's perspective, then would there be any access, any way for them to access these MOUs or not?
Sometimes they're put up on some website, say the Indonesian Embassy website or somewhere. But often we do not get to see the actual MOUs. Mm-hmm. We may have some comments made by people who had read the MOUs, but we do not have access to the MOUs. Well, one example is the Cambodian MOU. Mm-hmm. Until it was expired, we still couldn't look at the text of the MOU.
Hmm. And just one final note on this. Is there an obligation on the government's side to publish these MOUs?
There are no laws in Malaysia forcing the government to publish the MOUs. We do not have a Freedom of Information Act. So the government can choose what information it wants to release and what information it wants to hide. So there's no legal basis for freedom of information here in Malaysia.
Mm. All right. So coming back to the issue of how we treat domestic workers, right? Many Malaysian households rely on the labor provided by domestic workers. But unfortunately, at the same time, we have heard many horror stories about how domestic workers are being underpaid or not paid at all, how they live in really terrible living conditions, how they're mistreated, even abused, and in some awful cases, in some unfortunate cases, to the point of disability or even death. You know, how pervasive is mistreatment and abuse of domestic workers in Malaysia? You know, what do the cases that get reported in the news tell us about this problem that we have?
Actually, there are many cases that go unreported. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when the domestic worker runs away from her employer and she ends up in a shelter, seeking shelter somewhere, her case is actually not really reported because the domestic worker just wants to go home. She doesn't want to take any action. She's afraid of authorities. So domestic workers live under these kinds of fear. And they are quite warranted fears because if you went to a police station in Malaysia and you say, my employer is abusing me, I would be very surprised if the police treat that case kindly. So that is the general attitude that people have for domestic workers in this country.
Why is that?
I guess it is connected to gender, mm-hmm. because it is work done by women, and it is work done by women who are poorly educated sometimes, most times. It is work done by women in the home. Mm-hmm. So even in the home, without a domestic worker, this is work usually that is done by women. So I think this connection between domestic work and women's work is so strong that it is very undervalued. And therefore, domestic workers are undervalued as well. And if they are foreigners, it makes it more easy to abuse them, to lose their temper with them, to be very exacting with them, not to care at all about their needs. You know, people do not see the need for domestic workers to get a day off. They think when you give a day off, you're just encouraging mischief, that the woman would go out and mix with the wrong people and just be up to some mischief. So better keep an eye on her, better be at home. So this is the kind of attitude that people have towards women and girls. Now, just as you are very controlling most often of the actions of girls, where they go, in the same way, you're also controlling of the domestic worker.
Mm.
So it is a gender issue. It is also a class issue because domestic workers work in households where people have higher incomes.
Mm. And that's a huge thing to change, isn't it? The mindset that people have, because they, there are people who unfortunately don't view domestic workers as human beings. You know, they just view them as a function of their labor, and that contributes to all the problems that we're seeing in terms of how we treat domestic workers, right?
Yeah. I mean, it will require a big mindset shift in people, but we can do things that can encourage this mindset shift. For example, if the rights of domestic workers are very clear, if they are clearly put in the Employment Act, or if they are put in a separate law for domestic workers, then there is a law backing up how domestic workers are treated. And if we use that law, and if people complain using the law, it will begin to change. Just like, why is it that people pay their workers EPF and SOXO? Why is it that most people give them the number of days off? They have a weekly day off. Why is it? Because over the years, they had this law, and this law was enforced. And so employers began to learn that these are things that we need to obey.
Mm-hmm.
The same way, I think, if the rights of domestic workers are put in law over a period of time, we will begin to change our attitudes towards domestic workers.
Now, we'll get to those laws in a bit, but first we do have to go for a quick break for some messages. Today, I'm speaking to Irene Xavier, Executive Director of Selangor Friends of Women Association, also known as Persatuan Sahabat Wanita Selangor, on how we treat domestic workers in Malaysia. Don't go anywhere. Keep it here on Live and Learn BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn with me, Lim Soo Ann. I'm joined today by Irene Xavier, Executive Director of Selangor Friends of Women Association. And today we are talking about our treatment of domestic workers in the country, especially when it comes to cases of abuse and forced labour involving domestic workers. Now, this comes after Indonesia's ambassador to Malaysia, Hermono, told news portal FMT that Malaysia tends to see higher cases of abuse of domestic workers compared to neighbouring countries like Singapore, Hong Kong and Taiwan. Now, before we get into the legal reforms that we need, Irene, which you did briefly mention earlier, let's first talk about a recent case that was highlighted quite a bit in the news. Now, this was about a domestic worker who had been working for her employer for about 12 years. And throughout that time, he had refused to pay her salary, justifying it because they had provided her with food and boarding in exchange for her work. Now, the case was finally settled after a mediation between the Indonesian embassy and the employer, following which the employer had paid up more than 100,000 ringgit in unpaid wages to the domestic worker. How common is a case like this? You know, have you seen many cases of such as these before?
I mean, statistically, we don't have the statistics showing this kind of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But it is common enough. We come across cases like this every once in a while. I think every organization that works with the domestic workers will have these kind of cases where people have not been paid for years. So it is only when they come to the end of their patience and then they just take the risk and run away. It's only then that these things are highlighted. There are even worse cases than this. Women who have been abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And they suffer so much of mental harassment because they were abandoned in the streets of Kuala Lumpur that it took a long time to get the information from the domestic worker about where she worked, why she worked. In fact, right up to the end, we couldn't trace where she worked.
Oh, dear.
So she has actually lost a kind of sanity. She lost her sanity in coming to this country to work. It's only when someone recognized her face in a Facebook posting that they were able to find her family and find out when she had left Indonesia. So for many years, she has actually become quite old now. For many years, she has worked here. Well, people do these kinds of things all the time. Because I think the attitude is, I can get away with it. Who's going to stop me? I think this is basically the motivation. Because they think that they can get away with it. Our neighbors are not going to complain. They are our friends and they want to maintain the relationship with us. So they won't complain. So who's going to complain? The family is not going to complain. It's only if the domestic worker has family in Malaysia. Sometimes it is a family that contacts organizations. Like Sabak Wanita, they contact the organization to say, my sister works in Kajang, in your organization in Kajang. Can you find her for me? You know, these cases are rare, but you know, it's only when someone alerts us. If not, the abuse just goes on behind doors.
It really makes you question humanity, doesn't it, when you see reports of these things happen. And Irene, you mentioned that in some cases, these domestic workers don't even want to go down the legal route, right? They just want to go home. And compared to this more recent case where she had managed to claim her unpaid wages, how challenging is it for domestic workers to seek legal recourse, you know? And is it often that that happens?
I think it only happens when they have support. So like the case of this recent one, it is because the embassy stepped in. Then she felt safe enough to make her claims. Now, so they need that kind of support. It's only with that kind of support that they would take up a case. Like the case of the worker also has worked, I think, for more than 5 years, and the case went to court. She's just called the news reports as Mona because we don't want to give her real name. So it is because the NGO took up the case, found a lawyer to sue the employer, that the case came to court. So they need a lot of support. If they want to take up the case, they need a lot of support. It's very unlikely that by themselves, they would just go to the Labor Department and make a complaint and wait for the Labor Department to take up their case. And Labor Department also has so many restrictions. They won't take up the case if you're undocumented. That's their policy now. So a worker without her passport, without any work permit, she doesn't know whether she has a work permit or not, because the work permit is done by the employer. How is she going to go and complain? So these are the things that are missing in our management of migrant domestic workers.
So then coming to the rights and the protection that is offered to them, if at all, right? Is there anything that the law offers when it comes to protecting their rights? I understand that under the Employment Act 1955 as well, domestic workers are also exempt from the protection offered by the Act, right?
Yes. The Act actually just says that they are workers, calls them domestic servants. And then it says in another section, the first schedule, that they are exempted from weekly day off, the day of rest, exempted from that, exempted from annual leave, exempted from overtime calculations, exempted from maternity, and exempted from all other kinds of substantive rights that workers under the Employment Act will get. These are denied. It's shocking that Malaysia has had on her books so many years. We have signed CEDAW and said we will not discriminate against women, but openly the law discriminates against domestic workers who are mainly women.
Mm-hmm.
Mobility is complete discrimination in the law. So the only kind of thing that sometimes the Labor Department will take is if there's abuse, then they take it up as abuse. If there is, she's not working for the employer's household, but she also works in the employer's business, then those things maybe they will take up. But other things like calculating her wages and so on, that is left to their goodwill.
Hmm. So there's a lot left to be done, isn't it? And I understand that there have been calls for a for either an amendment to the Employment Act or for a separate law specifically for domestic workers. And Sabah Wanita has also been part of the group that has been calling for that. Could you elaborate more on what that would involve? You know, why is a law like that important, or amendments to what we have now?
A separate Domestic Workers Act was conceived because of the nature of work.
Mm-hmm.
The nature of work in a private household, in terms of house hours of work. Sometimes domestic work is, it depends on the time of the day.
Mm-hmm.
There are periods early in the morning perhaps, or late at night when it is a lot of work. And maybe there are some times perhaps in the afternoon or something where there's less work. So looking at these kind of things, groups decided that we should have a separate Domestic Workers Act that will incorporate or that will reflect the nature of domestic work. And then in terms of accommodation and so on, again, if they live in the household, then there needs to be special protection for them. They need to have privacy. The employer shouldn't have open access to their rooms and so on. It's important because they are women and they stay in the house all the time. So that's why the separate Domestic Workers Act was thought of a very long time ago. And actually a draft is already ready.
Mm.
If the government wants to take it up, that's one. But Sabah Wanita is also part of a coalition of trade unions and labor organizations called mm-hmm. the Labor Law Reform Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
The Labor Law Reform Coalition said there's no need for a separate law, but we should give domestic workers all the rights that workers have in the Employment Act. So that they are calling for this kind of provision, which also has been tabled. It's also been given to the Labor Human Resources Minister, but it was not mentioned at all in the recent amendment bill to the Employment Act. It was totally not mentioned at all. They just said that they will change domestic servants to domestic employees.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't say anything about Schedule 1. We spoke again to the minister and to the ministry about this and said, we insist that this be included. If the bill is going to come up for second reading, you should include this as well, to give domestic workers complete all the rights that other workers have.
Mm. Yes, at the end of the day, they are doing work, right? They are workers. You know, we shouldn't be treating them as anything less than that just because they live in your house. There's something that you mentioned, Irene, about how the Act also calls them as domestic servants. Now, that I know has been called out to be problematic. Why is that?
Well, because it reinforces the feudal paradigm mm-hmm. that they are workers.
Mm-hmm.
It also reinforces the patriarchal way of thinking that people, especially women, they are servants. So they are there to do your bidding. whatever you want them to do, they should do. So I think it's offensive. It's a very offensive term. And therefore, we don't want that. If you look at Convention 189 of ILO Convention, the Domestic Workers Convention, this is a point also that they mentioned very clearly, that they should only be called domestic workers, domestic employees, but not be called domestic servants, maids, helpers, you know, all these kind of terms, which do not denote a working relationship.
Mm. And on that same vein, speaking of language, the Indonesian ambassador to Malaysia brought up that some cases were amounting to modern-day slavery or forced labor. Do you think that that's something that we need to call as it is, you know, when there are situations that do constitute forced labor or modern-day slavery rather than referring to it as mistreatment or abuse?
Yeah, I think the correct term is forced labor or modern-day slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Because you control the movement of the person. You control her identity papers. You control her time. All of this you control. So this person is a slave. She has to get up when you tell her to get up and go to sleep when you tell her to go to sleep. You tell her when she can have time off and when she cannot have time off. Everything depends on you. This is modern day slavery. And I think we should call a spade a spade,
mm-hmm.
and start using the term as you suggested, saying that this is forced labor. It's not just abuse. I think the word abuse is a milder term.
Mm-hmm.
People can hide behind it. You know, like a person who did not pay the salary will say, well, I treated her well, I fed her properly, she had a nice place to stay, you know, trying to justify their treatment. The only thing I did wrong is I didn't give her the salary. I think we should take away those terms and say this is forced labor, because it is indicators of forced labor. These are indicators of forced labor. You don't pay salary for a long time. You restrict their movements. You control, keep their identity papers. All these are the indicators of forced labor.
How do you think the pandemic, especially when we think back about the periods of tight lockdown, right? How did those periods affect the welfare and the rights, the well-being of domestic workers? Because that was a time when no one could leave their homes at all.
Yeah, it was a very difficult period for domestic workers, especially for live-in domestic workers, because they were sort of trapped in that household 24 hours of the day, 7 days a week. And then they had the whole household staying home. You know, on normal days, people will go out to work. But this time, everybody was at home, which means that everybody needs to be fed. The house needs to be cleaned more often. So your workload just increased. And you couldn't go out. Even when it was lifted, they still would not allow, many domestic workers were not allowed to go off on their day off. They said, you know, you might go somewhere and they bring the virus back home.
Hmm.
So they wouldn't let them out as well. So it was a very trying time for live-in domestic workers. And on the other hand, for those who were not live-in, they lost their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The employer said, don't come to clean the house anymore until the restrictions are lifted. And so there were many foreign domestic workers as well as local domestic workers who didn't have enough food. And they were asking for food during that period. And there were many that were given food by the embassies, by NGOs, by well-wishers and so on.
Gosh, there's a lot of things to improve, isn't there? If we want to start making these changes, because we've been sort of just stuck in this loop for years and years, you know, and we haven't seen much changes happen. And like you mentioned, you know, the proposed laws haven't been accepted yet either. Now, laws are unfortunately up to the lawmakers to push for. I mean, at the end of the day, it is also in their hands. But at bringing it back to the community level, right, what would you like to see done better among employers or among the people, you know, in order for us to treat domestic workers better?
I would like employers to be more informed, to recognize that this is work. It is not just cleaning the house and so on. It is work.
Mm-hmm.
And just as when they work, they like to have a time off. They like to be treated properly, to be given their salaries on time. Now, this domestic worker is also a worker, and she needs the same rights that you have. Give her those rights. Because she works in your household. She takes care of your family. Maybe she takes care of the sick in your home. Maybe she takes care of the young in your home, and she takes care of the old in your home. So all of this is work for her.
Mm.
And what you're paying is probably not enough. Not enough. She's just doing it because she wants that salary for her family back home,
mm-hmm.
which is probably in a worse situation than here. And therefore, she is willing to work for you, because her economic situation is worse. I think the employers need to see that. And they need to respect them as workers and not to just treat them any way they like. I think this consciousness we need to bring up in society in general. These are things that faith groups need to inform from their pulpits, tell people that this is the way to treat domestic workers. So these kinds of things should be public knowledge. Yeah.
Mm. And if, say, you suspect that there is a case of forced labor involving a domestic worker happening, you know, in someone's home, what can someone, as a third person, as an outsider, do? Who can they go to for help?
I think they should report it. They should report it either to the Labor Department, or they should just report it to an NGO. Then the NGO would take it up. I think that is the easiest way. But if there's very grave danger, then they should rescue that girl. They should just take her away from there. If she's out sleeping on the porch every day, then the neighbors should bring it up as soon as possible. Yeah, because it's a very dangerous situation. People can die in that kind of condition.
Mm. And we've seen that happen years ago, haven't we? And I think, it just takes one person to make a change and to talk to others, to slowly change that mindset, to get that shift in mindset. You know, it's not easy, but every single step matters.
Yes, that's right.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Irene.
Thank you so much to Sue Ann.
I've been speaking to Irene Xavier, Executive Director of Selangor Friends of Women Association, also known as Persatuan Sahabat Wanita Selangor, about how we treat domestic workers and how that must change, and how laws are also needed for better enforcement and better protection of domestic workers' rights and welfare. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download our podcasts on bfm.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.